Goes the Mainspring. This is the pitch. Hello, welcome to the pitch. This is Lance.
I'm Dan, and we have a guest.
I'm Mike.
That's my... You guys demanded a third player, so they want another person on this podcast. We got a guest star.
And sucks to be you guys, because I just brought my brother.
Oh, it's nepotism. I see how it is. All right, today we are going to talk about some new alternative sculpts that came out this week. We're going to kind of review through those, give us our thoughts on that material. We're going to talk a little bit about the ATC, the American Team Championship. It's a War Machine Hordes tournament style that is all of a sudden being added with some Guild Ball. So we're definitely of interest in that area. And then myself and Mike are going to talk about Esters, the secondary captain of the Brewers, and our thoughts about her both being Brewers players. So we're going to get started with topic number one, which is the alt sculpts. We're going to start with what we usually do, which is the Union and Chains event that is still going. We recently got two new sculpts for alternatives with Gutter. We have what that lister has, Lady Death. So veteran Gutter is going to be an interesting character. And looking at the two sculpts, they are very, very similar.
Yeah, they are.
In the way that some of the other two are, but maybe not as much in terms of costume as it is almost the weapon she's using. If you look at the Brewer's or the Butcher's one, she's definitely, the chain is a little heavier and it has giant blade at the end of it, whereas the Fisherman's one is a little bit more of a hook on one end and a harpoon on the other, maybe a little bit less armored, a little shorter hair too, strangely, but that's about the only differences. I think I like the fish one better. The scale armor is kind of cool in comparison to just like the normal butcher's apron. And I think I like the weapon a little bit more, though I know a lot of people have talked online about that should being a rope instead of a chain. But maybe it is a rope. It looks a little different, but I don't know.
You're asking me to choose between like a red potato and a brown potato. These are way too similar to have a favorite. Ooh, one's got a hook, one's got a spear. It's like, whatever. They're both cool, but I don't have a favorite among them.
It's not the Hot Topic versus Hunter's Hemlock in terms of differences. So I don't know.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting anyway, so take a look at them. They're on the blog. Again, as we mentioned last week, I believe the Butchers were still ahead, at least for the last update we gave, but it was a very, very close contest. I think it was in the 52 to 48 range. So either one of these models is a possibility on the pitch in our near future. So anything else you want to review about those before we move on?
Nope. Just looking forward to seeing week three, because it's a 57 to 43 swing in the Butchers' favor right now.
Okay. All right. So it's moved more since we've last reported, so that's interesting. But the other thing we got is they kind of touted it for maybe about a week or so. They told us that Halloween alternate sculpts were coming, and they did not disappoint in terms of dropping into the store. You can now purchase three different sets of materials for Halloween specific. The first is a alternate sculpt Obulus, where he is standing there with a pumpkin head. It looks like he has, I don't know, something like a candy cane type staff. And then Dirge is sitting, the raven mascot is sitting on a basket full of candy or something. I don't know what exactly he's sitting on. But you would buy those sculpts and you would get the alternate cards for them that have kind of a Halloween theme to them. And then, of course, the sculpts that come with that. So what do you think of those?
The alternate sculpt is pretty neat for Obulus. I mean, I'm in it because I like playing Fangtooth with my Mortician, so I've already got an Easter sculpt, now I got a Halloween sculpt, so I'm one step closer to having a full-scale holiday-themed Morticians.
Right. You were talking about just doing that on your own, weren't you? Like, you didn't even expect them to come out with more holiday stuff, but now they're just doing it for you.
Yeah, they made my job a lot easier with this Halloween Obulus. I will say the cards, they almost look like a normal card, but with like a clip art version of a pumpkin, just copy and paste it on top of it. So the cards are kind of like whatever, but the models are neat at least.
The models are interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I I definitely like that they kind of over-exaggerated the mantle, the bird's mantle on them, and then put little candles on the top of it. I could see people buying this sculpt and then putting, you know, obviously his regular head on it just because it looks more ostentatious, but, you know, to each their own, however you want to go with it. I don't know if I'll necessarily buy this model for my morticians, but it's definitely an option out there if you want to go the full holiday route like Dan does. So, next, we'll move over to, hey, it's what we're talking about tonight. Later on tonight, we were discussing Esters, and here is an alternate sculpt Esters for Skaldic Fest is what they called it. So it's like their version of Oktoberfest. They have Esters in kind of a Germanic waitress gear holding two giant mugs of beer, and then Quaff, the mascot, with the full barrel on his neck like usual, but with a little Swiss hat on the top of it. What do you think of these?
I'm going to let Mike take this one. Mike, what do you think of the Esters?
It's good enough to pay the $30 for just the Esters model because yep. I'm never going to see Quaff on the table. So,
my thoughts exactly. Somebody was asking me that when they first came out. Like, you're going to buy that Esters and Quaff? And I'm like, no, I'm just going to buy the Esters. And they were like, no, it's a package. I'm like, oh, damn it. Like, I'm never going to play that dog. But sure, I guess, you know. Why not? I'll buy it for the Esters old sculpt. But, I mean, I like her regular one. The opera singer is very cool, and it looks stoic. It may be a little difficult to paint this model up to make it look like the rest of my team because she's so jolly. But I don't know. It's a cool sculpt. It's definitely more dynamic than the other one is. So it should be interesting to field that model on the table or to paint it up. I think the detail on it looks pretty interesting. So
I almost wanted to buy this model just because it was so cool looking. Like, yeah. Even though I don't play Brewers, I was like a fart away from buying this model. And a little fun snippet, if you look at the card, there is a picture of a pretzel in her horn. And then if you look at the model, her little bow tie on her outfit is in the shape of a pretzel. So kudos to the little food symbolism there.
That's very interesting. When I first bought into Brewers, people were talking about interesting ways to track momentum for your team. And they have, I don't remember what, it must be from like some Dungeons and Dragons thing or some just random miniatures company in Europe somewhere makes these bar patron miniatures where they're like all like sitting on stools, drinking and having and going crazy. And they're just little miniatures and you can buy like 12 of them. So I was going to buy them and then use them to track momentum. So I'd just start lining up bar patrons along the side of the pitch to show that I have that as momentum. I could see this character being, if I wanted to field my regular Esters, I could put this character in with those momentum bar patrons, you know, to kind of show these drunken fans getting excited about me playing my Brewers game. But
Lance, I got into Guild Ball so I wouldn't have to transport an army, not so I could bring an army of patrons to be my momentum counters.
Hey, whatever makes the game more dynamic and interesting. I get so many comments about my little beer tokens for my influence. This was just the next logical step. So that's about it for that model. You guys have any other thing you want to talk about with that one?
Nope.
All right. Then for all the people that I've talked to who are Farmers players, this next thing is very exciting for them. The Dark Harvest Zombie Thresher Pack. This is your first opportunity to buy Thresher, the new captain for the Farmers, before the second Farmers box comes out. He is available. And I have one of my players here in town. You may have seen some of the stuff on Guild Ball Supporters, painted by one of our local professional painters, Brian Finken. But he did a Zombie Farmers for my friend before this came out. We didn't even know that there was going to be a zombie farmer option for his other captain. So he's like, oh, cool. I don't even have to buy the regular Thresher anymore. I can just use this one, and it's already zombified. So you get zombie thresher. You get I'm trying to remember the other cards. Let me see who else is here. We get Zombie Blackheart, Coin, Ghast, Salt, and Snakeskin. As far as I know, everybody in this list, with the exception of Salt, is spoiler alert, dead in the fluff material. But you get zombie versions of all these characters because they've all died in the fluff. The Thresher model is, you know, definitely a zombie version of him with his scythe out. All the other ones are gravestones listing out the specifics of the characters. And this one, oh, it's grayscales. So it's grayscales grave with Salt laying on it with grayscales thing on it. So grayscales, again, spoiler alert, dead in the fluff. So all the materials of the people that are on this are dead. I can see people using like the Blackheart model in particular as an alternate Blackheart, because that model is cool. It's this ghost coming out of the graveyard of it. All the other ones are just kind of like the snake draped over it, or like a couple of knives in the ground and Ghast's mask. Maybe not necessarily as dynamic as to say, this is Ghast. It's like, it's a gravestone. What are you talking about? But the Blackheart is a full ghost with a guy reaching out with a sword that I could definitely make it dynamic enough on the table that that could be a really cool captain. But yeah, so the idea is to apparently be able to field this as a team for Halloween events and for just fun. But more importantly, for the Farmers players, it is your chance to get Thresher before the next box comes out and it's already available and ready to go.
Well, it's also a chance for Farmers players to have some harvest markers that aren't just cardboard chits.
Exactly. And again, with my friend with the zombie Farmers he already has, he's 100% buying this, using the zombie Thresher, and then using all these gravestones as his harvest markers for his team, built right in a theme for his team built up. So very good foresight for him and Brian to come up with that zombie theme before this even came out. But it's very exciting for the people that want it. And I think they're just really cool models. I mean, the detail on the zombification, you can, I'm kind of doing the zooming in on the store and looking at the stuff. The zombie Thresher is very detailed. He's got holes all over his legs, all kind of curved inward. And then again, that ghost Blackheart is really, really neat looking. If you get good at painting enough to where you can do kind of like the ghost ethereal effects, you could make that model look really, really good.
I've got some thoughts, but I want to hear Mike's before I spill my beans.
Okay.
Do you got any thoughts, Mike?
On the zombie stuff?
Yeah. Because you're going to buy them. I'm not going to be buying them. You already bought them?
Yeah, I've already put my order in.
Oh, well.
I woke up, got an email that said, hey, early access. Clicked on it, and I said, add to cart, and I bought it.
Well, there you go. If there's an endorsement if you already bought it. My two cents was this. Like, the zombie Thresher and the Blackstone grave, or Blackheart grave, 10 out of 10. The other four, I really don't care about, but at the same time, the price point is $40. Like, how, I can't be too picky at $40.
No.
Like, I'm getting two really good models, and then I'm getting four actual, like, I mean, I wouldn't ever use RIP Ghast as Ghast, it's just a freaking headstone, but right. I would totally use that as my harvest markers if I was playing Farmers.
You could play the grayscales as salt.
Just yeah, salt's on there. You know? Can use salt. Yeah. That one
you can
is just basically
play that
three
one
models.
With salt, really?
Yeah, and then maybe the coin one with the dead snake. But mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one would work too.
The other thing you could think of is that if you could somehow, I'm assuming these are the resin, you know, plastic injection molding like they do everything else, but you could maybe take them off the base of it and build it into a terrain piece if you wanted to, for like walls or a barrier of some sort. You could maybe try to build that. If you don't think you would use them for anything else, you could certainly use it for on the table material.
But I just think they priced it well that I can't criticize them. If it was $60, I'd be... You know, my nose would be stuck up and I'd be snooty, but at $40, good job.
You can make an easy graveyard 3x3 or whatever, and then just have them so you can put them in or out, just drill the little 30 millimeters. If you're not using it, make like a little mini graveyard as a train piece, and then when you want to use them, just take them out.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a really good idea too, yeah. So I knew it wasn't going to be over $50 because, as also was announced, Blacksmiths are finally up for order, and that box is only $50. So you can certainly grab that box, and I would expect the Dark Harvest would be less than the Blacksmiths because it's the same or less amount of models. You don't get the terrain piece, you don't get the goalpost, and that sort of thing. So I knew it was going to be under $50, but I'm glad that it's in the $40 range, which is definitely a comfortable price point for everybody. But I think that's about it for alternate sculpts and news.
Yep.
So I'll pass it off to you for the American Team Championship.
So this was recently posted by, I think, Andy Welton from Wisconsin.
Yep.
And it was on my feed and piqued my interest because I've actually been to the venue where this is going to be hosted at. It's at an Elks Lodge in Wisconsin.
Is it there? I thought it was in Milwaukee.
No, it's in Milwaukee now.
Oh, they moved
it. It's at a hotel. Yeah, it's at a big hotel in Milwaukee.
Nice
yeah.
try, Dan.
Potato, potato. Remember that?
It was in Madison for a while, and then they moved it, I believe, last year to Milwaukee, and now they're doing it. This is like their second year in that location, I think. I haven't been to the ATC ever before.
This is mainly a War Machine event. This is just Guild Ball kind of coming in. This isn't a...
I think it's the first year Guild Ball will be present at the ATC, yes. But if you've been anywhere in Wisconsin, you've been everywhere in Wisconsin. It all looks the same.
Oh,
so
hey, that's where I'm from originally. No insults thrown that direction, but I appreciate those guys. But the American Team Championship was originally designed by a lot of the Madison War Machine guys to give Americans a chance to try out and get good at the team format that the WTC, the World Team Championships for War Machine and Hordes, work under, which is the idea of being in a team of, I think, was it 3 or 5 people normally for WTC? I can't remember.
WTC is 5, but this is intentionally 3, at least the Guild Ball portion is, because 5 is a goddamn mess to run.
Right, I'm more just kind of going into the origin story of the ATC as to what it was. So sure. It was a War Machine Hordes tournament to get Americans better at the idea of doing this World Team Championship, so that if this tournament gets good enough, then the team who wins it might be one of the American teams that gets sent to Europe for Belgium, or, you know, for the WTC. And last year, the WTC added Guild Ball material. So Guild Ball and War Machine was being played in the same convention center in the same area with representation from countries all over the world to play in this tournament setting. And that's why the ATC, following the WTC, said, oh, we should do Guild Ball here too. And that's where we're currently sitting.
And why am I talking about it? Because the Germans wrecked us. So it's time for us to get good, scrubs. And I'm going to read basically from the page to let you know if you haven't checked this out yet. But the Guild Ball ATC is a 3-person team, but it's only limited to 8 teams. And that kind of segues back to, this is originally a War Machine event, so this is their first time bringing in Guild Ball as a side event. So right now it's still just a side event, so space is limited. Teams will be paired off against each other randomly in the first round using Swiss chess. And then, based on win records, that's where you just normal 8-man tournament. Captains from each team work together, but the games are played individually. So the captains are going to be used to decide the pairings. And every round, you basically get to look at the tables and pick one of your teams after looking at your opponent's roster of teams. So if I see that my opponent is playing engineers, fish, and masons, I can say, all right, well, I really can't beat the engineers player, so I'm going to lock myself in on table 3, and that gives me a better chance to avoid the engineers because I get to pick who my opponent is. So if you want to avoid a matchup in a 3-man tournament, you can always avoid a matchup. If that sounds complicated, you can always check the basically ATC website by just Googling ATC and Guild Ball, and they explain it in a bit more
step-by-step. They're doing the same Wisconsin team tournament.
Correct.
Yeah, so each captain will choose the opposite table, so, and then from there, you get to choose your leftovers.
Yeah, so it's table 1 and 3, get one model, one team down. Mm-hmm. Then the captain can decide their pairing, and then on the opposite side, and then whoever's left gets played in the middle table, essentially.
Yep.
So there's a lot of strategy that comes into the idea of building a team for this. I'm willing to announce at this point that I have a team. Myself and 2 other locals that we have here are going to be playing in this tournament. We just locked ourselves into this tonight. So there are still spots available. I do not know how many. It doesn't say on the registration site. If you have any questions, look up that post and talk to the guys who are organizing it, which I believe is Ben Lang and Andy Welt. And they should be able to help you out with any kind of questions you may have. But definitely register on that site. You have to put down some money to lock in your space for it, and then the hotel room and all that material afterwards if you're not in the Milwaukee area to get that locked in. So I'm very interested and excited about the fact that I'm going to be playing in this thing and trying to figure out how to work this team tournament strategy. I don't expect to do well, but I expect to at least have a great experience in learning how this system works.
Yeah, well, you Des Moines Dirt Weirdles can experience getting second place, because I'm pretty sure my meta is going to send out a team, and I think I can actually go now. We got two.
Okay. You got two.
We got at least
you and James.
Me and James, and either Mike and Rich. So we should have three.
That's awesome. Well, I don't mind getting second to you guys. That'd be fine. If Iowa crushes top two, that'd be just great to start out with the ATC. So
get out of here, Chicago. You're done.
Don't imagine anyone from Wisconsin winning.
If it's like the Wisconsin team tournament and War Machine, Wisconsin is not. They're good at hosting, but they're not good at winning.
Excellent hosts.
Really?
Excellent hosts. Yeah, top notch hosts.
They have Keith on their team, don't they, usually? Or does he usually play for Muse?
If two Iowans were on his team, that's an Iowa team.
Fair enough. It's the majority of what your team is made out of to make it that point. But
there is another part to the ATC. So there's a 2-day event. The first day on Saturday will be the 3-man tournament, and then on Sunday there's a Guild Ball double tournament. It's a 2-person team event, limited to 16 teams. And then there's also going to be a single-person event, according to my brother. Are you sure about that, Mike?
I thought there was.
I don't see that on this list.
I hadn't heard about that. Mm. There was some conversation about the idea that when you come there with a 3-man team, to all of a sudden the second day being a 2-man thing, where does that one other guy go?
Yeah, it seems awful.
I would assume the idea would be that you would create a pool of players that could then all pair off and play in it just for fun. Like, that's not the one that, I mean, quote unquote, none of it really matters, but it's not the one that's really important. That's the more fun, you know, blow off some steam Sunday before you head out of town type of material. So, I mean, there's definitely some conversation about that. I just don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. If I have my team and my two players want to go, they can go. And if I'm by myself and I can find someone else to play with, I will play with whatever. You know, I'll join whatever team wants to have me, or otherwise I'll watch games, because I love watching Guild Ball. And I learn a lot from watching this game played. So I will still get my money's worth out of the experience. But what you pay for to get into the 3-man tournament will cover your entire weekend of games, plus I think some food, right? We get like lunch or dinner or something like that. I can't remember what else was covered in the cost, but
they don't, even though the entry fee is pricey, you're paying $75 a person. You don't feel that pain when you go there. And obviously it's not like Adepticon. You're not going to a big convention, but when I went to the WTC, they had printed materials for every event. So they had cards for every team so that they could just place down cards with individual player names on each table. There was food involved. Like, they do a good job at putting the money back into the event. And obviously most of it is going to go into renting out the venue for us to play. I will critique them in that this is way more confusing than it needs to be. If I'm just looking at the site, it's talking about 3 different events. I have a November 30th deadline to register, and it's talking about using rules effective as of December 13th. And then the event takes place in January. It's too much info.
Sure. Yeah, it's just a good way to get through the winter doldrums. If you're anywhere near the area, or if you want to travel a good distance to come to a fun team tournament, it is available for you. Information is available on the website. You can find it online. I looked it up today for American Team Championship War Machine Hordes, and I was able to find the main page. And right at the top of it is, hey, we're adding Guild Ball. Here's all the information about it. So it's relatively easy to find. Otherwise, you should be able to find it on the Guild Ball Supporters Facebook page. You'll see the link and everything there. Trying to think, anything else on the ATC?
That's it.
Sweet. But now get off the mic. Let me and Mike talk.
All right. Let's teach me how to Dougie, or teach me how to Esters.
Teach you how to Esters. Mike, you want to get started, or you want me to get kick off?
Go for it. That's fine.
All right, man. Well, Esters, in our continuing series of what is the captain that people don't take as often as the main captain on their team? We are diving into Esters, the secondary captain for the Brewers. We have myself. I've played a lot of tournaments with Brewers. I consider them my main team, even though I own most of the other teams. And I do think since she has come out, she has been my favorite captain on the Brewers. I really like the difference in play style that she brings to the table other than Tapper. Tapper is one of those guys that you kind of feel you have to load up a lot. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who was just getting into the game. We played a kickoff game with just 3v3, and he was asking me the question. He's like, "Do you just normally fill up your captain to full?" And I'm like, "Well, it kind of depends." And the idea is that there tends to be on most teams two captains, a captain that gets fully loaded and has to do some sort of thing, whether it's ramboing out and being a crazy goal scorer like Shark, or loading up and going to kill one target like Filet does, or even to consider Tapper as being the two-inch reach model that gets in there, gets commanding aura up, and makes the rest of his team better at killing stuff, on top of knocking down momentously onto results on the playbook. But then the other captain is always some sort of support, quote-unquote. They do something from the back lines. They tend to help out a little bit, but they're much more flexible. They tend to... You don't have to load them up to get a lot of results out of the player. So I loved the idea of Esters in that I was playing so many games with Tappers during Season 1, getting the Brewer's play style down, understanding how it works, and I found an all of a sudden sense of freedom of the idea that there might be a turn where Esters gets one influence, two influence, and she's still doing things. She's still manipulating the field and the ability to give out the rest of my team to almost max out their influence, to me, felt like I was able to take any plan, make it kind of start working, and if something went wrong, I always had a backup idea, because here was Spigot in the back with four influence instead of the two he might have had in a Tapper team or something along those lines. Because of, I mean, the Tapper's recycling of influence at the time, at least, was always onto himself. You would always give him the old Jake's bonus. Since they nerfed it and changed it out to where he had to give it to other players, that's not been as much of the case as it was in Season 1. But I definitely just found the idea of her clearing conditions, healing people, knocking down, you know, momentously on 3 and 4 with a little bit of damage behind it, and then just the gluttonous mass idea and throwing out some AoEs, setting people on fire, putting them in those things was just fun, on top of being able to do the operatic calls, put out buffs to my players to either, you know, hyperspeed a player to get him somewhere, to put the extra damage on Hooper so he can kill somebody almost as well as he can with Tapper, and that sort of material. And I just really liked the flexibility she brought to the field. So generic thoughts about Esters, that's kind of where I'm coming from on her. Mike, what do you think about her, generically speaking?
She's definitely the Jill of all trades. She's a little contradicting where she's flexible, but I feel like as the game develops, it becomes kind of predictable because she only has so much influence to give out. So, I mean, once you give it out, you can kind of say, okay, this player is doing this player is not doing this. Whereas when you're playing a Tapper lineup, there's always the old Jakes where you have a Friday that has no influence, and all of a sudden you old Jakes her to 2 influence, and now she's a girl threat, you know, sprint and kick. So there's kind of where, as a game develops, you know, there might be a kick scatter where now it lands by Friday, and now she has influence to do this. But I guess I don't play Esther so much as to give one and done. She's one I actually pretty much load up every turn. She's just going in because with the chest style, Gluttonous Mass usually works out more better than not, because they have to do 2 activations to kind of get a benefit. So unless my Esther's activation doesn't do anything, then I'm usually okay. But I mean, between the early activation of a speed 8 model sprinting, then dropping 2 AoEs that are tooled up to do, you know, potential 7 damage, counting the burning condition on 2 models.
Right.
Then coming in next turn, legendarying herself for speed and damage, and just coming in, you know, with 4 attacks after charging, I mean, it's pretty good, because she doesn't hit as hard as Tapper, obviously, but if she can get on someone that's, you know, hurt or knocked down, then she can definitely put them to the ground. And she just has some benefits against some of the core models like Flint, Siren, things like those that have, like, charmed male that she doesn't care about.
Right, right. I mean, playing female characters in this game that can get work done tends to be an advantage because of those types of rules, that there's only the one charmed female character right now, with Tater on the farmers. I definitely see, there's been a couple times where I've played Butcher's teams that were all women, and I'd be playing against people that would have the charmed male characters, and I'd be like, huh, my character doesn't care, and I go charging into them, and they're like, oh man, I can't believe your entire team is women. And it ended up being just enough of an advantage to be important. And I do agree. I mean, I'm not saying that you have to put one, or that you should only put one on her and be done, because I have definitely fully loaded her, but the fact is I don't feel like I always have to do that. And that if I do, she can always put the damage call on herself to make those, you know, because she has a really short playbook. She's tac 5 with 4 results. Mm-hmm. That on a charge, you can wrap that thing around, usually knock a model down, probably push some stuff around, and still get a decent amount of damage out of her. People are kind of surprised by how much she's able to get killed. On top of being 22 hit points with Gluttonous Mass, she's a very difficult model to remove from the table. I would almost argue maybe more so than Tapper, even with Tough Hide, just because of her ability to heal herself and keep herself somewhat alive. Though she does have difficulty with the 2-inch reach models that can hit her, trigger the Gluttonous Mass, and then keep hitting her beyond that.
So you both agree that she's flexible, but you take a different perspective when it comes to putting influence on the model. Yeah. Do you have like a standby, like a standard build that you go with Esters?
For a roster, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. My team is almost always, when I play her, and this does tend to be my default tournament team. I mentioned it in our first episode when we were talking about going to Minnesota that first round. I played my default Esters tournament team just because it's literally the one I have the most amount of practice with. But it's Esters and Scum. I really like Mash just in general. Like, he's been one of my favorite characters since he came out, and the fact that he gets the armor bonus while within the range of her, 4 inches of her, has just been, you know, being a 3-2 model or possibly up to a 4-2 model with the defense buff, is interesting, plus the 2-inch unpredictable movement, that sort of thing.
No one sees that on a big model like Mash. Like,
they really don't think
he is unpredictable.
It, yeah. Yeah, wait, what? He does what now? So, yeah, so my team is normally Esther's Scum, her husband Mash, and Hooper, because I never leave home without Hooper. I just love that guy to death. He's always versatile and always seems to get a lot of work done. And then it's usually original Spigot and Friday. So with that, I have Esther's and Hooper kind of doing the melee portion of the thing. Mash more for control and goal, snapshot volley material, and then Friday for the goal scoring in general, and then of course Spigot just being his general support self. That tends to be my default Esters team. It kind of does a little bit of everything. It's usually a 2-2 team, and tends to get the job done better. I do start out kind of with the way that Mike originally mentioned. I love the idea, and especially something that we talked about, the unpredictability of the team. People don't expect, especially if I start getting the ball, even if I don't get the ball, a lot of times my first turn will be Esther's with maybe 5 influence on her. She'll get tooled up by Spigot, then she'll sprint forward and lob the 2 AoEs really close to or possibly into the deployment zone of my opponent, and if they've done their lineup on their starting line really close together, I can possibly hit 2 to 3 models with fire, rough ground, and 6 damage up to 7 if they leave the fire on the model. And that's not something people normally see from a Brewer's team, is AoE condition damage from the starting line to their starting line.
Well, Mike, that's one take on the Brewers. What's your, do you have a go-to?
So, I hate Mash. I absolutely hate Mash. And I'm not saying Mash is bad. I'm not saying Mash is bad. It's just that... Yeah. The way I play Mash makes him undesirable, because the way I play Esters is she's not Tapper, where she's usually a first activation, but she's a first activation on a previous turn where I set up like a knockdown and a crowd out. She's not a, okay, I'm just going to come in onto you, because she can't do it. So I pigeonholed Mash to try to be this, set fights up, and just, his playbook being, he's similar, you know, 5 tac, 4, knockdown on 3, just didn't work out very well. So I ended up, prior to the Harry nerf, playing a lot of the core 4, Captain Scum, Friday Spigot, then plus Stoker, plus Harry the Hat pre-his nerf. Because then I had two different ways to set fire for Stoker, and then just Harry did everything I wanted to do between pushing and knockdown. Since they nerfed Harry, I've been playing the same five, and then I'll either switch in someone like Hooper or Stave. I'll play kind of just a thing, because Stave has the ability to get a lot of knockdowns that I want, and he's someone that gets a lot of angles in that now I can give him plus two speed, and if I get a momentum somewhere, you know, if he can glide. And it just gives me a lot of just different options there. I mean, Stave's kind of a liability in some games, but if you can get that couple knockdowns or whatever, or some of my games, you know, if you get a player that's, let's say, a 4-6 speed or a 5-7, you can kind of take that player out of the game with Stave if you get isolated, because you have a 7.5 to hit them with an AoE and then knock them back 4 inches directly away. So now they're 11.5 away. So if they sprint 7, they're still 4 away from the action pretty much. So
just to explain the 7.5, are you talking about how Lob Barrel is a range 6, but the AoE...
Yeah, so it's a 3-inch, so you center the AoE on your 6, so that gives you 1.5 inches.
So that gives you 7.5 for a range on the Lob Barrel. Gotcha.
Right.
Right. I hate Stave for the reasons you hate MASH. Almost exactly. Like, you were listing off the reasons you didn't like MASH, and I'm sitting there going, that is 100% my Stave experience. I don't play him to where I think his benefit comes in, and I just end up getting frustrated that the model's on the table. I know a lot of people have had him touch them in a bad way, and they hate that he's when he shows up, and then when my roster doesn't even have him listed, they breathe a sigh of relief that they don't have to worry about that guy. But that's the only character I would think of that if I put him on the pitch, it would be someone I would want to have Quaff on the team for, purely for the second wind. And that feels like 4 influence just out there that isn't going to generate momentum. Yes, it's going to change the condition of the field a little bit, but it really isn't going to modify it in a beneficial way to where I'm going to be scoring points necessarily or scoring momentum. So I've always left that guy on my sideline since the beginning of the game. I just cannot get that guy to work for me. Not saying people can't, and I'm not saying he's a terrible model. He just doesn't play Brewers the way I like to play Brewers, which is much more in your face and being active versus sitting at a distance, lobbing it and hoping to. Because if I roll that snake eyes to hit something that's crucial, I just feel like my whole world collapses. And then that 2-0 model is just he becomes a vending machine with the word momentum written on it that someone could just hit the button as many times as they want.
And
if I can't get him out, if I can't get him out of there, I'm just screwed. And I feel like if I had anybody else on the table over there, I'd be like, well, MASH would have survived this because he's unpredictable movement. Or, you know, I could list 5 or 6 other models I would have rather had on the table because he failed the one thing I needed him to do. And that's been that way since the beginning. And I've gotten a lot of flack for it. I definitely have. You can read, you know, the Brewers forums on Steamforge have a number of why the hell is Stave so terrible? Please God, you know, buff this guy on the next errata. But then there are plenty of champions out there for him. So I'm glad to hear there are people around that still play him. Just, I can't, the way I play him, I just can't get him to work for me. I could put more work into it, but I have too much fun with my other builds and I just keep going. So
Brewers forums, who needs that when you can read Explosive Brew on Midwest Wargaming?
Oh, nah. Well, yeah, we got to drop that. Drop that.
I haven't written anything in a while on that. Yeah, work a lot don't help.
You've got
I was going to write about Esters, and they nerfed Harry. Then they brought in Guild Identity. Then they brought, like, different deployments. Like, well, this is out the window.
Yeah, so it's all gone. I was having the conversation with I've actually been having some really nice conversations on Facebook with Brandon Morris, who used to be on the Mobile podcast. I don't think he is anymore. He's been telling me how much he's been loving this podcast. Thank you, Brandon. And we've been having some conversations about Brewers to an extent, but then a bit about the ATC and team composition and stuff like that. We talked about the ideas like, man, if Steamforge drops the alternate deployment rules as being canon, this whole game goes sideways.
Oh, like, my God.
Not in a bad way, but that everybody has to rethink the way you play this game.
I would be all in on Masons, and just Granite would be in every list. Granite, with
that's
alternate.
100% he said he's like, Scrum, if they do alternate deployment, Scrum teams become the new gods. And he's like, I think you would see Masons, Brewers, and Blacksmiths on the top of every roster or ranking when and if they change the alternate deployment rules or not. So he said he's done quite a few tests with it, and he's had a lot of success with Brewers. He's like, it's been very difficult for some of his local players to play into him when he's been playing Brewers with alternate deployment rules. So I'm kind of – and I've never played them. The only alternate deployment games I've played has been against you, Dan, when you came over and we did those films of the fish games. Those have been the only alternate deployment games I've played, maybe other than one other one at a local team night that asked about it. And we showed how it went, and we played a couple of test rounds. We didn't actually even finish the game.
It was really fun. I would totally be down for playing another one. But yeah. To get us back on target, I'm going to comment on something you mentioned about how the alternate deployment would make the Scrum teams good. I feel like right now people have the mindset, or the maybe it's reality, that the range teams are good. I'm seeing a lot of love for engineers. I'm seeing a lot of love for alchemists with smoke. But one of the things that I think is neat about Esters is that she can actually be a ranged captain. You have Esters, you have Stoker, and you have Stave. Is there ever a lineup that either of you would try, or even Hemlock, is there ever a lineup that you guys would try with like all this ranged brewers? Is that a viable list?
Mike, I think you had an idea on one at least.
I mean, that's kind of what I've been playing before. It's just more of a range that kind of changes into a melee team. There's a couple interesting points and a couple things. I kind of, your idea of when you're talking about how you like playing silence with the one die, just play or whatever.
Silence for the one die to just, even though it's high variance, it's also high reward if I get that one die.
Yeah, that's a big swing.
The tucked and shut out. Yeah, sure.
So it had me looking at the different union members because I brought Avarice and Greed, and I felt like while I could play this guy on Tapper, I really couldn't bring him in Esters just because of the influence pool. Right. But that brought up Hemlock, so I started doing some searching, and it looks like this was some of the options on the previous kind of team tournaments for some of these Brewer players because of things like Corsair getting better because Shark got nerfed, Hammer getting a buff, seeing more plays. So you have a lot of these three defense captains now that if you can get a blind off on for minus two attack, move, and kick, I mean, it just really hampers their style. Or even just the threat of it, you know, putting one influence on Hemlock, you kind of force, say, okay, well, you kind of have to activate your captain before I activate Hemlock, or, you know, I'm potentially blinding. So you can kind of force her hand a little bit. And the nice thing is she just adds a couple similarities to my current team, because Stoker is probably one of my players I enjoy playing more. He just has a lot of pluses. He'd probably be the best brewer if he had 2-inch melee, in my opinion.
Oh, but God, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But just 2-inch push on one is ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
I hate that model, FYI, but go on. I hate playing against them, is what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, one of the nice things is like playing a Stoker and a Hooper, or they have these, they want to clear conditions, or these clear conditions trivially. Well, Hemlock also has a magical brew, so you have, you know, playing Stoker and Hemlock, now you have two models that don't care about playing into that range game of engineers or whatnot where they get pushed and knocked down and they just clear it themselves and heal. She brings the Noxious Blast, which is an 8-inch, which you can do. She has the ability to do, you know, kind of clear AoEs similar to Esther's and her thing, but it's influence instead of momentum. She's 10 HP, so that's her biggest drawback, that you can't get a lot of players, you know, dedicated melee or a couple of good dice spikes on like heavy hitting tooled up range players will take her out. But if you can avoid that, you know, she's pretty durable in that sense with Magical Brew and Slippery for a 6 defense, 5 obey base.
Yep.
I believe she's also Momentous Tackle on 1, so there's another option of getting the ball. And she's fairly quick. I mean, she's 6'8", so she's quick for a Brewers team.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, sub Stave out for her. Now you have Stoker that has that potential. If someone's on fire, 4 damage, flame jet. You've got the Dirty Knife also to add poison. You've got Esther's with hers. And then you can just kind of trade in that sense where here's my team where I'm a little beefier. I'm a little more HP than some of the others. And unlike engineers where there's not a lot of models that want to get in melee with you, most of the brewers will want to get, you know, Esther's will want to get in, Stoker will want to get in, Spigot loves getting in on anything knocked down. I mean,
yeah.
I can't, the number of times my opponent gets confused where it's like the third round and all I've done is give like one or two to Spigot and then I give him four and he activates and he just deletes 20 HP off a model knocked down. They're like,
yeah,
okay then.
I think all I right. even dared Mike, like, you can't kill me unless you come at me with Tapper. And I had a knockdown Scalpel. And he's like, well, do you want to bet? I can kill you with two influence with Spigot. And I was like, you can't do that. And sure enough, he did it.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I mean, this guy, like, raps for, rolls nine dice on a forward thing and then tool himself up. It's like six on a rap, more like seven or eight pretty much on one influence. It's pretty crazy.
Right.
But right. I think that's an interesting idea I want to try, because one of the things playing a scrum team is if you have a bad start to your fight, you know, you initiate and maybe you get something, but you don't win that next die roll, and then they get to do their stuff and win the next one. Like, losing the initiative on a scrum fight just puts you downhill a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Where, as a brewers with this range option now, you can try to soften up a lot of your targets or help control the pitch for your slower models where I'm dropping rough ground, I'm dropping fire, I'm slowing down your models, but being able to put my models up to their threat range. So now, you know, should I win, or even if you win, you're still with the fire condition out, and I can choose to go second in that sense and deny you the ability to clear. Or, you know, if you win, you may want to go second to have the ability to clear.
Right.
So it puts them in a rough spot in that sense versus the Tapper team of, you know, I'm coming forward with my team to get in the melee with you and trying to get Tapper in a good spot to buff slash set up some knockdowns and pushes and potentially killing someone that's damaged.
Right. Do you think that's do you think that team is a good fish counter just for the softness of that team and in an attempt to slow them down from, especially like a shark led fish team properly played is an absolute nightmare for Tapper brewers generally speaking, but brewers just in general because of the jump into the middle of your team, kick off, caught in the net and bounce out. Does the range team, do you think, put enough pressure on making that more difficult because of fire and that sort of thing?
The couple of things there is, yeah, you're probably going to see shark still in brewers just because I don't know if Corsair can handle tough hide. You know, with no whatever, you're still going to see shark. So he got nerfed to help you a bit where you can hopefully get a couple players out of it. Your rough ground won't slow down shark still because he's light foot. But the benefit you have is you really bully Siren a lot more than a Tapper team because all your AoEs don't care about her -5 range to plays. So you're like, cool, I'm not targeting you. Here's take 6-7 damage. You have 10 HP. You're dead. So that's one where also, like, Stave can be a real boon or he can be your downfall.
Your liability. Because shark be like, ooh, I'm going after that guy. I'm going to dodge 15 inches and then attack him 5 times.
Here's just, you know, here's six momentum, no problem. You know, every turn off of this guy. But it's really playing around. It's still a game of playing around the feet and slash trying to kill the ball in some way. And that's where, you know, mash helps in that sense. Hooper with a Friday helps because if I can get Friday tough hide and plus defense, now she's like a 6-2.
Oh, within Spigot's aura of protection.
You know?
Tough skin.
So then she's just, other than Siren, you know, she's pretty hard to get the ball off at that point. Like,
right.
So there's your team lineup kind of changes a bit because you can't play everything you want in that sense. Like, you do have to add some 2-inch melee just because their whole team has it.
Yeah.
But Esther's really threatens Siren, which is nice. The Hag, she can threaten the Hag too, because if they play that model, Grayscale's another one that's, you know, he's a 4-0 generally. So yeah, they have some of the lower defense you can kind of get. Shark is definitely a big problem. Sometimes it's better to try to trap him, but with the 1-inch melee, it's hard to kind of trap him versus the tapper set up there.
I have a comment that I'm noticing here. Like, with the Esters, sort of like an Esters gun line, I don't think of it as powerful as like a Ballista gun line or a Smoke gun line. But I feel like this is like a straight slam dunk versus any of those other gunline lists, specifically because you have two models such as Stoker and Hemlock who can Magical Brew at the start of the activation, just remove all conditions and heal two. So they're just going to like LOL at the conditions from a Smoke team or the knockdown from a Ballista team. But if you also play Hooper, he has that ability where it's just like he... God, what's that ability? Where True Grit.
True Grit.
Immediately
yeah,
removes
all heroic.
It's just a bonus of clearing conditions for him. It's like, cool, I'll clear these conditions and I'll get plus two tack for it.
Like, is this just like a straight counter to any other gunline list? If you were to play like an Esters range team that includes both Hooper, Hemlock, and Stoker, like, would that just auto win against a Smoke Alchemist or a Ballista team?
It depends a lot on their soccer game. I mean, Brewers are still Brewers in that sense where you have a couple models that are fast enough to kind of get the ball and whatnot. And unlike Fish that can disengage pretty quickly and retrieve balls, Engineers have a couple things too they can do, so that depends. Like, if they have Salvo, you just can't leave the ball in the corner, you know, otherwise he's going to tether it towards you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the big thing I'm trying to play that, is just where are you going to go? But, yeah, I mean, that's a bane of playing these range games that don't generate momentum where the engineers are going. So generally they're going to kind of do their stuff and still have the momentum to win that next round to try to set up their turn from there. But with having models that self-heal, you definitely soften that impact and make it a little less trivial when you come in.
Nice thing about Esters is you're probably going to lose the momentum race, because if you're playing against Ballista, he's gaining momentum for his range attacks. But if they were to ever go against Esters with your Gluttonous Mass, you have a momentum for a counterattack, which means they do nothing except trigger your Gluttonous Mass, so you can always do a free attack against them. So it's, I guess it's really frustrating to go against Esters when you win the momentum, when you win the initiative.
Specifically against an engineer's team, is in your game of Ballista one, the idea is for him to kind of hit you and knock you back, or to put you in rough ground under blaster, usually from Ratchet or replicated from Hoist, you know, that kind of material. They're trying to slow you down. They don't want you to engage them. Most gun lines wither the moment you get them engaged, is when those models tend to lose their viability. They have a little difficulty making themselves work. I'm not saying Ballista can't be still incredibly dangerous, especially in terms of pushing you off a pitch if you try to engage him into melee, as we kind of talked about in the battle reports before. But I don't, the idea of having a team like that, if they can't, yes, they can clear the conditions, heal, but if you're still spending all of your actions just running forward, trying to do something, they're generating momentum and you're not. You need to get those lines to meet, and you need to get engaged. So you have to soften that impact, but you still have to be able to move upfield and be doing something, you know, because their velocity is going to come screaming around the corner, score a goal. You need to have something to respond with that, and a way to keep it away from those tethers or... was it Locust has the whole ball kick? He can shoot from like 6 inches away. He can pass the ball to someone else. So free killing the ball, or, you know, kicking the ball to open field is never a good idea against that type of material, especially if they have those models in their rosters. Yes, I agree with what you're saying in terms of minimizing the impact, but you do want to make sure your team composition still involves forward progression and meeting that gun line and putting the hurt down on them, because that's how you're going to get your points. You have to be able to get the points somewhere. You can't just weather their storm.
From someone who's never played Esters but has played against Esters, I find her very frustrating as an opponent. It soaks up much of my time trying to figure out how to get the ball from Esters, specifically since I've been dabbling with Morticians. Like, it's, I'm basically telegraphing my moves to my brewer's opponent if I'm trying to puppet master her, because I have to spend an activation first with silence or some other model to trigger her gluttonous mass, and that gives her a turn to realize what I'm going to do next with puppet master and just move out of range or engage obelisk or do something to prevent that. Like, I'm gluttonous mass, I feel like, is just so good that it gives her much more information and also allows her to, I don't know. It's just, unless you got 2-inch range, she's so fucking good.
Well, she's the only only model I can think of in the game that is quote-unquote important, that has the rule. She's a model that's going to have a lot of influence and is going to negatively affect the game in a very big way because she's the captain. Most captains in the game are designed to be this giant impact on the field. So with the only other options, I believe, is what, Fangtooth? So he's a little bit more of a middle scrum, beat stick kind of side character, or Compound, who is normally way back by the goalpost. This is a model with gluttonous mass that's going to be in your, you know, in your grill, trying to, you know, negatively affect the game against you, and you're trying to work around this rule that's really only like a side thing on a couple of other models that you don't see that often.
Mike, you've beaten me more times than I can count with Esther as a hater.
Love her.
I do love her too. I just think it poses a new question, because when you play against people that have played Brewers, against Brewers a lot, especially if they're playing out of like the kickoff box, they know how to deal with Tapper. Tapper is a relatively known quantity if you've played against him before. So when you sit down in a tournament and you bring Tapper, if you're playing against anybody who has played Tapper, against Tapper in a significant number of times, they usually have an answer, or they have an idea of how to mitigate his usage. Esther's is one of those models that people don't plan around. They don't think about her that often. They don't think about her AoEs. The idea of staying, you know, with like Tapper's threat range is 9 inches. He's a 4/7 with 2-inch reach. They'll put their model 9.5 inches away from you, and you have no good ways of, you know, marking or pushing the model closer. Then all of a sudden, you've got 3 or 4 influence on this guy, and you can't do anything with it. Especially when you're kicking off, you know, the team, they'll try to keep their team back to win the momentum race and make sure that Tapper isn't effectual. Whereas Esther's, if she's got influence on her, she's gonna find a way to get to you. Through the AoEs. If she can reach you in personal combat, she'll do that. If she's going to throw AoEs at you, she'll do it that way. So there's never a time where Esther's is going to have wasted influence on her. She's always going to be able to do something if she has at least 2, if not more, on her.
She's a bitch. Mike, why do you keep playing this model?
Why wouldn't you?
Because the internet says she's bad.
I mean, I kind of think that's been less so, you know. Season 2, start of season 3, definitely was a lot of hate, but I think as this season's progressed, you see kind of less of that, you know, because a lot of those models that people felt tore up, like Filet or Obulus, or things that were just kind of hard for her to deal with, as she can't counter 2-inch melee opponents, you know, she, Filet didn't care too much about gluttonous mass and sense, but I think just the way the game's kind of changed too, where you're playing that keep ball away, you know, she does a pretty good job as far as putting out AoE terrains to limit the space your opponent can go, so she in of herself helps to play that game. And I just liked her aspect of being a utility model, where, you know, she can kind of fill any role for that to turn. What, you know, she can be your main beatdown, she can be denial, she can just speed up, or, you know, give speed or damage or defense to, and say, okay, that's, you know, what I'm going to do, and reposition here or come up here for like a gang up. And be a, you know, a model where it's like, well, you can't really knock me down, or you have to invest so much to knock me down, which is usually a benefit for you.
One of the things I am most frustrated when I play against my brother, who's fielding Esther's, is his use of Fire Blast, rather than putting Fire Blast directly on a model, in which means I can then remove the burning condition and charge whoever I want, a lot of times Mike will put the Fire Blast in front of the model so that it denies me any charge lanes, because I can't remove that condition mid-charge. So he just immediately impacts a -2 to my movement by, rather than being greedy and putting 2 damage and inflicting that condition on me, he puts it right in front of me. So I feel like that's a next level play with Esters that a lot of people are misusing. Not always targeting the model with the burning condition, but instead putting that Fire Blast in front of a model so that they can't remove that condition mid-charge.
It's an old school alchemist trick. They do that a lot their way too. If they think they can put the damage on a bunch of models, they'll do it. If they're only going to get one, they would almost rather put it in front of the model before it activates versus dropping it an AoE just on one model just to screw you over so that you're suffering whatever the effect is without moving the model way out of range to get around that AoE and not triggering anything in it.
It's so good. It's so frustrating. I hate it.
It's definitely, you know, a kickoff strategy for her. If you want to skip the damage and kick off with her so she's farther up, now sprint either 6 or 8 and then drop the rough ground, hopefully on a clump of 2 or so, and then drop the fire right in front. So if they do want to go forward towards you, they're -4. And if they want to avoid the fire, then they have to go around. So you can kind of push them in a direction you want or cut off. You know, I've played a few games where it's you cut off 2 of their players and now you have your 6 versus their 4, 6 versus their 3.
Yep. I agree with everything Mike said. I mean, especially the utility information with her. That's kind of the point I was trying to make at the beginning of it, was that there's going to be, you know, there might be turns where she will not do a lot, and you can spread that 4 influence she brings to the table out to more players just to give you more options for the rest of your team to do things amazingly.
I don't know why people ever thought she was a bad captain.
I think it's mostly 2-inch reach and being used to the damage output potential of Tapper and didn't want to get away from that playstyle when it came to playing Brewers. But if you're a Brewers player and you're listening to this podcast and you have not played Esters, I definitely think you need to give her more of a chance, and I think you'll like what you see.
She's got a 2 activation receiving goal.
Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. You do 2 activations and then she scores a goal.
Tell me how!
That's that humor we were looking for with that extra co-host to come along. Jokes.
Got it. Don't tell me. Show me, Michael.
It's changed a lot. It used to be really convoluted with like Harry and Spigot. Now it's kind of changed. It'll be a lot better if they do the guild identity. But it boils down to right now, without guild identity, having the free heroic. Or not free, but when you spend a momentum, you get it back.
Yeah.
So generally, like, Spigot retrieves the ball, kicks to Esters. Yeah, see, this was with the Harry for the whole doing the free teamwork to dodge.
Right.
And then Spigot does the whole times called,
heroic,
saving the momentum. Yep. And then Esters dodges 4 forward, and then she can sprint 8 forward, and then kick her goal of 6. So it's, you know, you have to be like straight in front of the goal pretty much. Hope there's not like it's pretty limited because you have to hope there's not like a terrain in the middle that diverges you or whatnot.
Right.
And then you're pretty much, if you're going to do it right away, you have to eat up any models blocking. But it's one of those things where if you're looking for a cheeky way to get 4 points that your opponent was expecting, because that's something too. I mean, Brewers, if I can get a goal right away, I'm not too worried about saving it, you know, just taking it, because having that threat of I already have 4 points and knowing I'm going to get takeouts, you know, is really threatening.
Well, I do that with Friday pretty much on a regular. I try to, it depends on where the opponent's kicking off to or looks like they're going to try to kick off to. I'll put Friday on the other end of the field. I'll try to pass down my entire team eventually to Friday, dodge her 4 inches forward. Then during her activation, she gets the 2-inch shadow-like, sprints forward, usually pays the momentum for I shoot better after a beer. Then you can bonus time goal shot from 10 inches away. It's not, first turn goals for Brewers is possible. It's not always a guarantee, but and definitely people don't see it from your captain, especially from Esther's being as slow as she is, like a 4.6 model with a 6-inch kick. There's no way she's coming into my goalpost on the turn, first turn. But yeah, you can manufacture that to happen if you want to put Harry back in your team and for the fire and for maybe. I mean, and Harry's good for goading too. I mean, people kind of forget about the fact that he can goad on top of the Molotov. So even though he can't go crazy and he's been nerfed, the hat aura, goading, and Molotov is still beneficial in an Esther's team. You have more tools out of that guy than just him going crazy, tax 7, and having an amazing playbook.
Yeah, it'll be interesting if the good identities hit and they keep the free heroic, because then you have the interesting...
Spigot 2.
What Spigot 2? What?
So all you need is momentum to score a goal.
Oh, right.
Like, maybe you give him an influence to sprint, but I mean, with the free heroic, he can heroic to get the... Now I can do a kick without spending influence, and then you still have the momentum to do the goal kick.
Sure.
So I think he moves, like, 9 inches on a sprint if he has a ball, or he moves, like, 7 without or something like that.
He moves 10 inches.
So he moves 8, I guess, then.
So normally he's 5'8", but with the ball, so he goes 10 inches.
Yeah, so seven.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so I mean, it's something where like you can just give one influence to, and that could be a thing where you kind of dark horse that as far as like, well, he only has one.
Good. I didn't think about that. That's actually really good.
So, but they need a couple things. I can't wait for that card.
God, I hope they implement one of these changes, either the alternate deployment or the
GIC
cards, because it just changes the meta so much. And
we'll probably see in a couple months, right? Because after SteamCon comes the new season.
No, Season 4 is not going to be until next year's SteamCon, they announced. But they might change the Season 3 material to these new alternate rules starting at SteamCon. I think SteamCon might be the launch event for the changing of the guard. I might be wrong on that, but I think they talked about wanting Season 3 to last a little bit longer than Season 2 did. They didn't want to like rush themselves through it.
Sure.
Well, God help us, because the Brewers definitely came out ahead above their pack as far as the GIC cards. So many heal 5.
They got rid of the heal 5, didn't they? They brought it down to 4. So I don't think they have a heal 5 anymore.
I don't know if they have a heal 5 anymore or not. They changed free heroic to heal 3, which is fine, because I mean, that was just crazy to have it, like, no penalty to have this one. It's like, why would I not like
it was
play
a,
this?
It was a nerf for the sake of a nerf. I kind of wanted it to be... I wanted them to balance some of the cards instead of just changing the healing rate, but I get the idea.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why I would not take that one versus any of the others. I mean, the others had to be really, really good to say, here's a team that has a bunch of models with heroic plays, and here's your free heroic one. Like, always having Spigot 1...
Yeah.
Times called up on your team seems pretty good. So.
I agree. I can't think of much. Quick side Brewers note. Have you ever had a chance to play Lucky yet? Have you put Lucky on the field before?
Oh, shit. That's something I wanted to explore.
I haven't. I'm waiting to kind of paint mine up. But he looks really interesting. Some of the side chatter I've been seeing is like having your opponent just... trying to decide who they're going to dodge after you do your free dodge.
Right.
And just, like, what they're going to do with it, you know, seems interesting. And then he has, you know, some interesting abilities based on if you win or lose initiative. And then, no, he looks solid. I mean, the playbook 5 is kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
But I think...
On tag 5, I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, tag 5, playbook 5.
I feel like that's
5.
A bit more of a Mason's thing than a Brewers thing. If he was a pure Brewers player, he probably had a 4 playbook.
Yeah, they definitely kind of balance there. But other than that, I mean, he's got a couple thing. You know, he hits a little harder. He can get some extra. He's got the dodges, so obviously that's very un-Breweristic like. But
and not momentous push dodge on 3, but yeah, and then momentous knockdown on that same result. So I don't know. I'm not sure. I couldn't quite wrap my brain about what I would do with that guy. To see what would happen, just because he seems so circumstantial.
I think he probably, in my mind, fits more on a tapper, because he definitely wants the plus tack.
Yeah.
you know, if somehow you could convince, and Commanding Aura. Yeah, you know, and then just as far as if you're ever trying to make a statement to try to play Quaff, he's another kind of like pin pot that really wants that plus tack. I mean, Stoker's kind of in the same boat too.
Having four at his play at the end of his playbook is pretty substantial.
You know, so four is pretty good. I mean, it's usually what
four damage.
Yeah, having a base four, so now you know he hits for five, and so he wraps for seven. It's one more, but none of that's momentous is a problem. A lot of the brewers, you know, they hit for six on a wrap if they have a damage buff, but they get at least one momentous result off that.
Right. Can we just talk about, like, briefly how cool his ability raise the stakes is? Like, it's such a thought exercise. So he makes a 4-inch dodge for zero influence, but the opponent then gets to make a 4-inch dodge as well. So, like, obviously, if he's engaged with someone, it's not very relevant because they could then make a 4-inch dodge to re-engage you. But if you're not engaged, there's so many, I don't know, permutations, so many scenarios where this could be beneficial, but it's so many scenarios where it could be detrimental. It's such a thought exercise. It's hard to figure out Lucky, but I feel like if someone does put the time and effort into Lucky, he's got to be great for either Masons or Brewers.
No, he looks solid. I mean, ability to clear conditions on himself or another player within four is pretty solid. And then the going to four influence, if you don't have the initiative, isn't bad either, you know? So it can turn into kind of a semi-beat or two.
Yeah. Okay. Just curious, any thoughts on him? I haven't had a chance to really sit down and study him and think about where I'd want to put him, but when I saw the card, I kind of read over it and was somewhat flummoxed as to what exactly I would actually be able to do in my current field. So,
I just thought of the poor fools who have actually submitted a ticket to Steamforge saying, hey, my lucky model didn't have an arm.
That is the joke. you know, this is straight. Whatever that guy's character's name is from Simpsons, but I think it's been good Brewers talk. I've been happy to talk with you about this. I mean, we've had conversations before post tournaments, I believe, regarding Brewers, so glad to have it on something that other people can listen to and comment on and let us know if we're crazy or back either one of us up on what we're talking about. I think we have fairly similar playstyle ideas with it, but with just a few tweaks here and there. I am interested in that gunline idea. I think I might try that at some point locally before I try to tournament, just to see if I can make it work. I don't know if I necessarily would want to lock in Hemlock as my union choice for a 10-man roster in a tournament unless I knew I was going to get a lot of work done out of her. But
do you have a union option?
What have I been putting in there? I mean, obviously Harry was my go-to for a while. The last couple tournaments I put in when I had them, I put in Avarice and Greed just for a Tapper team, extra punch. But I could definitely throw in the idea of Hemlock, but I wouldn't want to shut that down instead of something like Gutter or someone who I can maybe get more work done out of. Generally speaking.
So here's the other sweet thing that I'm gonna do, and you can do it too, it's fine.
Cool.
You do the Stoker missile.
Yep.
Where you play Esters.
Okay.
And you have Stoker kickoff.
Okay.
And then you at some point you give him tooled up.
Okay.
And then you get Esters to give him either blow your legendary for the speed and damage, but what you're trying to do is really get someone on fire and then give him the damage.
Yeah.
And then you have Stave go.
No, no.
And you hit Stoker with the loud barrel to push him 4 inches forward.
Mm-hmm.
And then he stands himself up because of magical brew.
Yep.
And he charges into the guy, hopefully at like plus +3 damage.
So you're going to want to hit somebody who's gone already so that makes it hard for them to clear condition. And definitely if you're getting the ball kickoff so that they can't generate momentum in any way. But
this only works if you're playing against someone from Wisconsin.
The other downside is like you have to play Quaff.
Yeah.
You have to play Quaff because you have to give him the plus +1 tack.
Oh, sure.
So that might rule out because I don't know how you fit Quaff on a 10-man team. But
Yeah.
It's definitely something I'm going to do with my brother Dan and probably take out one of his players right away.
Oh, God. I know we're going long, but I just have to briefly mention the bullshit that Mike has tried against our new players where he kicks off with Stave and he lines up everybody right next to the edge of the board. And so he kicks off as close as he can to the board edge so that when some idiot grabs the ball, he lobs a barrel at that fool and knocks him off the edge of the board. Like, if you have two grains of intelligence, don't do this if your opponent has Stave. Like, don't position yourself next to 4 inches from the board edge.
Dude, don't give away my sweet tech.
It only works against idiots and fools.
How many players have I pushed off with this tactic against you, Dan?
Too many.
Oh, my God. Okay, you guys are disgusting.
I think that's the bottom of the barrel of the brewer's tank that we have dug into at this point.
Oh, my God, yeah. No, it kind of reminds me of that meme I saw today. Someone had it on the pundit forums. It was the evil Kermit thing. And it was something along the lines of, it was like, you're teaching the game to a new player as a pundit. And it's like, good me. It's like, teach them the basics, evil me. Table the bitch. It's just like that came to my mind when you were talking about that.
I have won every demo game that I've played.
I play against the league games where we play against our newer players. And I had the dream Rage 2 versus like a knockdown Tapper that was in like melee of the rest of his teams, and so Gutter just scything blowed the entire brewer team away.
We are bad people. If you're demoing new players, don't do what we do.
It was cool. I told him, you know, like, I'm gonna live the dream. Why should my dream be shut down?
Let me live this. So you're gonna have a bad time for a second here, but please just let me do this. I need this.
I mean, then it won't happen to them again. Please. I'm just saving them.
Please watch me masturbate. Yes.
I might climax during this. I'm just saying, but this is gonna be good. Watch this. You just tell them how it happens. Oh, you're the worst. All right. Do we have anything more on this?
No. I think we have scraped the bottom of this scum of the barrel. We're done with brewers.
All right. For those of you who know who I am, I've definitely done a lot of work with the Muse on Minis podcast. I know those gentlemen very well and have done a lot of work with them. Muse on Minis, of course, carries a ton of Guild Ball related products. We have measuring sticks, widgets, proxy bases, little 1-inch steppers for both 30, 40, and 50 millimeter bases, as well as the official tokens of Steamforged games. Go ahead and buy anything you need for your Guild Ball needs at museonminis.com/store, and they will take care of you. For the pitch, this has been Lance.
This is Dan.
Stave.
I think that's good. We're just going to leave it there. Good night, folks.
Good night.